Oh, I get it. That's fine. I'll see you tomorrow anyway, at the Concept Kingdom meeting. What? There's a Concept King. No, I know what it is. You're going? I am. Bailey thought I should go. And broadcast it? Of course. Is that a problem? No, no, Annie said, clearly stalling, processing. I'm just surprised. Those meetings are full of sensitive intellectual property. Maybe he's planning to have you attend the beginning or something. I can't imagine. Annie's toilet flushed, and May saw that she'd stood up. You leaving? Yeah, I'm really so late I want to puke now. Okay, don't puke. Annie hurried to the door and was gone. May had 4 minutes to get to Dr. Villalobos. She stood, turned her audio back on, and left the bathroom. Then she walked back in, silenced her audio, sat down in the same stall, and gave herself a minute to get herself together. Let people think she was constipated. She didn't care. She was sure Annie was crying by now, wherever she was. May was sobbing and was cursing Annie, cursing every blonde inch of her, her smug sense of entitlement. So what that she'd been at the circle longer? They were peers now, but Annie couldn't accept it. May would have to make sure she did. It was 2:02 when she arrived. Hello, May, Dr. Villalobos said, greeting her in the clinic lobby. I see your heart rate is normal, and I imagine with your jog over here, all your viewers are getting some interesting data, too. Come in. In retrospect, it shouldn't have been a surprise that Dr. Villalobos had become a viewer's favorite, too. With her extravagant curves, her sultry eyes, and harmonica voice, she was volcanic on screen. She was the doctor everyone, especially straight men, wished they'd had. Though True You had made lewd comments almost impossible for anyone wanting to keep their job or spouse, Dr. Villalobos brought out a genteel but no less demonstrative brand of appreciation. So good to see the good doctor, one man wrote as May entered the office.
Let the examination begin, said another braver soul.
And Dr. Villalobos, while putting on a show of brisk professionalism, seemed to enjoy it too. Today she was wearing a zippered blouse that displayed an amount of her ample chest that at a proper distance was appropriate, but, seen through May's close camera, was somehow obscene.
So your vitals have been looking good, she said to May.
May was sitting on the examination table, the doctor standing before her. Looking at her wrist, May checked the image her viewers were getting, and she knew the men would be pleased. As if realizing the picture might be getting too provocative, Dr. Villalobos turned to the wall screen. On it, a few hundred data points were displayed.
Your step count can be better, she said. You're averaging only 5,300 when you should be at 10,000. Someone your age, especially, should be even higher than that.
I know, May said. It's just been busy lately.
Okay, but let's bring those steps up. As a promise to me? Now, because we're talking to all your watchers now, I'd like to tout the overall program your own data feeds into, May. It's called the Complete Health Data Program, or CHAD for short. Chad was an ex of mine, and Chad, if you're out there, I didn't name it for you.
May's wrist went wild with messages. Chad, you fool.
Through CHAD, we get real-time data on everyone at the circle. May, you and the newbies were the first to get the new wristbands, but since then, we've equipped everyone else at the circle. And this has enabled us to get perfect and complete data on the 11,000 people here. Can you imagine? The first boon has been that when the flu arrived on campus last week, we knew in minutes who brought it. We sent her home, and no one else was infected. If only we could prevent people from bringing germs onto campus, right? If they never left, getting dirty out there, then we'd be all set. But let me get off my soapbox and focus on you, May.
As long as the news is good, May said, and tried to smile. But she was uneasy and wanted to move all this along.
Well, I think it's good, the doctor said. This comes from a watcher in Scotland. He'd been tracking your vitals and cross-referencing with your DNA markers. He realized that the way you're eating, particularly nitrates, is elevating your propensity for cancer.
Jesus, really? Is that the bad news I'm here for?
No, no, don't worry. It's easily solved. You don't have cancer and probably won't get it. But you know you have a marker for gastrointestinal cancer, just an increased risk. And this researcher in Glasgow who'd been following you and your vitals saw that you're eating salami and other meats with nitrates that might be tipping you towards cellular mutation.
You keep scaring me.
Oh, God, I'm sorry. I don't mean to. But thank God he was watching. I mean, we're watching too, and we're getting better at watching all the time. But the beauty of having so many friends out there, as you do, is that one of them, 5,000 miles away, has helped you avert a growing risk.
So no more nitrates.
Right. Let's keep the nitrates. I've zinged you a list of foods that contain them, and your watchers can see too. They should always be eaten in moderation, but should be avoided altogether if there's any history of or risk of cancer. I hope you'll be sure to convey this to your parents, in case they haven't been checking their own zing feed.
Oh, I'm sure they have, May said.
Okay, and this is the not-so-good news. It's not about you or your health. It's your parents. They're fine, but I want to show you something.
The doctor brought up the sea change camera feeds in May's parents' house, set up a month into her father's treatment. The medical team at the Circle was taking a strong interest in her father's case and wanted as much data as it could get.
You see anything wrong?
May scanned the screen. Where a grid of 16 images should have been visible, 12 were blank.
There are only 4 working, she said.
Correct, said the doctor.
May watched the 4 feeds for signs of her parents. She saw none.
Has Tech been there to check?
No need.
We saw them do it.
For each one, they reached up and put some kind of cover over them, maybe just some sticker or fabric. Did you know about these?
I didn't. I'm so sorry. They shouldn't have done this.
Instinctively, May checked her current viewership. 1,298,001. It always spiked during the visits to Dr. Villalobos. Now all these people knew. May felt her face flush.
Have you heard from your folks recently?
Dr. Villalobos asked.
Our records say you haven't, but maybe not in the last few days, May said.
In fact, she hadn't been in touch for over a week. She tried to call them, to no avail. She'd zinged and received no response.
Would you be willing to go visit?
The doctor asked.
As you know, good medical care is hard to provide when we're in the dark.
May was driving home, having left work at 5, something she hadn't done in weeks, and was thinking of her parents, what kind of madness had overtaken them, and she was worried that somehow Mercer's own madness had infected them. How dare they disconnect cameras? After all she'd done to help, after all the Circle had done to bend all rules to come to their aid, and what would Annie say?
Damn her,
May thought as she made her way home, the air growing warmer as the distance grew between her and the Pacific. May had set up her lens on the car dash, inserting it into a special mount created for her time in the car.
That fucking debutante.
This was bad timing. Annie would likely find some way to turn all this to her advantage, just when her envy of May, and it was that, it was so abundantly obvious, was growing. She could cut May down to size again. May and her nothing town, her parking garage parents who couldn't keep their screens operational, who couldn't keep themselves healthy, who took a monumental gift, premium health care, for free, and abused it. May knew what Annie was thinking in her little entitled blonde head. You just can't help some people. Annie's family line went back to the Mayflower, her ancestors having settled this country, and their ancestors having owned some vast swath of England. Their blood was blue all the way back, it seemed, to the invention of the wheel. In fact, if anyone's bloodline had invented the wheel, it would have been Annie's. It would make absolute and perfect sense and would surprise no one.
May had discovered all this one Thanksgiving at Annie's house, with 20-odd relatives there, all with their thin noses, their pink skin, their weak eyes hidden behind 40 lenses, when she became aware, during an appropriately self-effacing conversation, for Annie's family was equally unwilling to talk too much or care too much about their lineage, that some distant relative of theirs had been at the very first Thanksgiving.
Oh, God, who cares?
Annie's mother had said, when May had pressed for more details.
Some random guy got on a boat. He probably owed money all over the old country.
And they had proceeded with dinner. Afterward, Annie had, at May's insistence, shown her some documents, ancient yellowed papers detailing their family history, a beautiful black portfolio of genealogies, scholarly articles, pictures of grave old men with extravagant sideburns standing near rough-hewn cabins. In other visits to Annie's house, her family was equally generous, unassuming, and careless with their name. But when Annie's sister was married and the extended family arrived, May saw a different side. She was seated at a table of single men and women, most of them Annie's cousins, and next to Annie's aunt. She was a wiry woman in her 40s, her features similar to Annie's but arranged with lesser results. She was recently divorced, having left a man beneath my station, she said with pretend haughtiness. And do you know Annie from? She'd first turned to May fully 20 minutes into dinner. College, we were roommates. I thought her roommate was Pakistani. That was freshman year. And you saved the day. Where are you from? Middle of the state, Central Valley, a small town no one's heard of, sort of near Fresno. May drove on, remembering all this, some of it injecting fresh pain into her, something still wet and raw. Wow, Fresno, the aunt had said, pretending to smile. I haven't heard that word in a long time, thank God. She'd taken a swallow from her gin and tonic and squinted out at the wedding party. The important thing is that you got out. I know good colleges look for people like you. That's probably why I didn't get in where I wanted to. Don't let anyone tell you Exeter helps. So many quota spots to fill with people from Pakistan and Fresno, right? The first time she'd gone home transparent had been revelatory and had burnished May's faith in humanity. She'd had a simple evening with her parents, making and eating dinner, and while doing so, they discussed the differences in her father's treatment before and after they became insured through the circle. Viewers could see both the triumphs of his treatment, her father seemed vibrant and moved with ease through the house, but they also saw the toll the disease was taking on him. He fell awkwardly while trying to make his way upstairs, and afterward there was a flood of messages from concerned viewers, followed by thousands of smiles from all over the world, people suggesting new drug combinations, new physical therapy regimens, new doctors, experimental treatments, Eastern medicine, Jesus. Hundreds of churches put him in their weekly prayers. May's parents felt confident in their doctors, and most viewers could see that her father's care was exceptional. So what was more important and plentiful than the medical comments were those simply cheering him and the family on. May cried reading the messages. It was a flood of love. People sharing their own stories, so many living with MS themselves. Others spoke of their own struggles, living with osteoporosis, with Bell's palsy, with Crohn's disease. May had been forwarding the messages to her parents, but after a few days decided to make their own email and mailing address public so her parents could be emboldened and inspired by the outpouring themselves every day. This, the second time she'd gone home, would, she knew, be even better. After she addressed the issue with the cameras, which she expected was some sort of misunderstanding, she planned to give all those who had reached out the chance to see her parents again, and to give her parents a chance to thank all those who had sent them smiles and help. She found the two of them in the kitchen, chopping vegetables. How are you guys? She said, while forcing them into a three-way embrace. They both smelled of onions.
You're sure affectionate tonight, May, her father said.
Ha-ha, May said, and tried to indicate with a rolling back of her eyelids that they should not imply that she was ever less affectionate. As if remembering that they were on camera and that their daughter was now a more visible and important person, her parents adjusted their behavior. They made lasagna, with May adding a few ingredients additional guidance had asked her to bring and display to watchers. When dinner was ready and May had given adequate camera time to the products, they all sat down. So there's a slight concern from the health folks that some of your cameras aren't working, May said, keeping it light.
Really? Her father said, smiling. Maybe we should check the batteries.
He winked at her mother. You guys, May said, knowing she had to make this statement very clear, knowing this was a pivotal moment for their own health and the overall health data gathering system the Circle was trying to make possible. How can anyone provide you with good health care when you don't allow them to see how you're doing? It's like going to see a doctor and not allowing her to take your pulse.
That's a very good point, her father said. I think we should eat.
We'll get them fixed right away,
her mother said, and that began what was a very strange night, during which May's parents agreed readily with all of May's arguments about transparency, nodded their heads vigorously when she talked about the necessity for everyone to be on board, the corollary to vaccines, how they only worked with full participation. They agreed heartily with it all, complimenting May repeatedly on her powers of persuasion and logic. It was odd. They were being far too cooperative. They sat down to eat, and May did something she'd never done before, and which she hoped her parents wouldn't ruin by acting like it was unusual. She gave a toast.
Here's a toast to you two, she said. And while we're at it, a toast to all the thousands of people who reached out to you guys after the last time I was here.
Her parents smiled stiffly and raised their glasses. They ate for a few moments, and when her mother had carefully chewed and swallowed her first bite, she smiled and looked directly into the lens, which May had told her repeatedly not to do.
Well, we sure did get a lot of messages, her mother said.
May's father joined in.
Your mom's been sorting through them, and we've been making a little dent in the pile every day, but it's a lot of work, I have to say.
Her mother rested her hand on May's arm.
Not that we don't appreciate it, because we do. We surely do. I just want to go on record as asking everyone's forgiveness for our tardiness in answering all the messages.
We've gotten thousands,
her father noted, poking at his salad. Her mother smiled stiffly.
And again, we appreciate the outpouring, but even if we spent 1 minute on each response, that's 1,000 minutes. Think of it, 16 hours just for some basic response to the messages. Oh, geez, now I sound ungrateful.
May was glad her mother said this because they did sound ungrateful. They were complaining about people caring about them. And just when May thought her mother would reverse herself, would encourage more good wishes, her father spoke and made it worse. Like her mother, he spoke directly into the lens.
But we do ask you, from now on, to just send your best wishes through the air. Or if you pray, just pray for us. No need to put it into a message, just...
And he closed his eyes and squeezed them tight.
Send your good wishes, your good vibes, our way. No need to email or zing or anything. Just good thoughts. Send them through the air. That's all we ask.
I think you just mean to say, May said, trying to hold her temper, that it'll just take you a little while to answer all of the messages, but you'll get to them all eventually.
Her father didn't hesitate.
Well, I can't say that, May. I don't want to promise that. It's actually very stressful, and we've already had many people get angry when they don't hear back from us in a given amount of time. They send one message, then they send 10 more in the same day. Did I say something wrong? Sorry, I was only trying to help. Up yours. They have these neurotic conversations with themselves, so I don't want to imply the kind of immediate message turnaround that most of your friends seem to require.
Dad, stop. You sound terrible.
Her mother leaned forward.
May, your dad's just trying to say that our lives are already pretty fraught, and we have our hands full just working, paying bills, and taking care of the health stuff. If we have 16 hours more work to do, then that puts us in an untenable position. Can you see where we're coming from? I say that again with all due respect and gratitude to everyone who has wished us well.
After dinner, her parents wanted to watch a movie, and they did so. Basic Instinct, at her father's insistence. He'd seen it more than any other film, always citing the nods to Hitchcock, the many witty homage. Though he'd never made clear his love of Hitchcock in the first place, May had long suspected that the movie, with its constant and varied sexual tensions, made him randy. As her parents watched the film, May tried to make the time more interesting by sending a series of zings about it, tracking and commenting on the number of moments offensive to the LGBT community. She was getting a great response, but then saw the time, 9:30, and figured she should get on the road and back to the circle.
Well, I'm going to head out, she said.
May thought she caught something in her father's eye, some quick look to her mother that might have said, at last, but she could have been mistaken. She put on her coat, and her mother met her at the door, an envelope in her hand.
Mercer asked us to give this to you.
May took it, a simple business-sized envelope, It wasn't even addressed to her. No name, nothing. She kissed her mother's cheek, left the house, the air outside still warm. She pulled out and drove toward the highway. But the letter was on her lap, and her curiosity overtook her. She pulled over and opened it.
Dear May,